It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here, so is Mary Jo Foley. Leo is off. I'm Mike Elgin filling in for Leo. We're going to talk about Windows 10, Windows Phone, Microsoft Office, Xbox, and much more. We're even going to hear what Paul thinks of the new Star Wars trailer. Stick around. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 391, recorded December 3rd, 2014. I Want to Believe. This episode is brought to you by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use offer code Windows and get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Squarespace. Squarespace recently launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7. Which has a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, new templates, and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code Windows at checkout to get 10% off. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/windows and entering promo code Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show about Microsoft, Windows, and all things Redmond, with Paul Thurrott of the Super Site for Windows. How you doing, Paul?
I'm okay.
Oh, come on. you? We need some excitement.
Curiously unprepared for that question.
WinSuperSite.com is your site. And I remember you talking on this show that you didn't mean it to be like a sort of superhero version of Windows site.
Yeah.
It was the extra site, the ultra site.
It was just a site for one thing. A lot of people are like, oh, you must think very highly of yourself. You know, you have a super site, not a regular site. And it was just meant to be something that was focused on a single topic. And of course, it kind of, like so many things do.
I think you should have a costume with a cape made. Super site, you know.
It's like, yeah, I don't feel that super.
Well, I think it's a super site. I enjoy it. It's an awesome site. You're breaking stuff left and right. And I'm not talking about software. I'm talking about news.
I'm doing that too.
And so as a news person who's always looking for scoops and details on the news, I find it incredibly, incredibly enlightening. So I appreciate that. And speaking of enlightening, Mary Jo Foley of ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com. How you doing, Mary Jo?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
You guys are like the dynamic duo, again, another superhero reference, of Windows revelation, and it's just awesome to talk to you. I wish I could get both of you on the show, but you know what the problem is? Like on Tech News Today, which we do every day, a little plug for the other show, we're always looking for people who break stories, and there really aren't very many. You know, there's if you look at the larger scope of people who do tech journalism, the percentage of those who actually consistently break stories is it's a low one-digit percentage, and both of you do it consistently. The problem with people like you is you're too busy to come on my show because you're too busy breaking other stories.
So there are many problems with people like us.
So <There are.
laughs> anyway, I appreciate it. And I just wanted to get that plug in because in addition to all kinds of technical help and contextual information and analysis, you're also breaking hard news about in technology. And I really, really appreciate that. So why don't we launch into the show? I should say, by the way, my name is Mike Elgin. Leo is out today. He's sailing with Larry Ellison, I think, in San Francisco Bay. And so I'm filling in for him.
That is actually plausible.
Yeah, it could. It's probably in Lake Larry, which is the little pond at the Oracle headquarters.
Oh,
but who knows? You never know what Leo's up to. So I'm thrilled to be here hosting the show with you guys for the first time ever. So why don't we launch into it? Apparently, Paul, Microsoft fixes build 9879?
Sort of. You know, the past couple of weeks, Mary Jo was there for the first of those shows, and then she was off last week. I think you must have been flying home that day. And I've really beaten this topic to death in that the latest and last technical preview build of this year is horribly unstable and unreliable and all kinds of problems. And so Microsoft has actually issued several fixes, none of which address the core issue, which is instability in File Explorer, explorer.exe, what used to be called Windows Explorer on previous versions. And it's gotten to the point where I have to reboot my computer at least a couple times a day, basically, to clear this out. And, you know, I'm willing to take one for the team and everything, but after a particularly bad day the other day, I was literally thinking, you know, I'm going to have to just go back to 8.1 for a little while. I can't get work done. This is becoming a problem. And then they announced this fix, and I thought, fantastic. And the funny thing is, if you some people are able to install it just fine. Some people who think they install it just fine might want to go look, because it might not have installed. And that's what's been happening to me, because as a longtime kind of Windows guy, one of the things I know to do is when you install Windows updates and you reboot your computer, the first thing you do is you go back and you look at Windows updates again, because there's almost always something else. And the first time I installed this update, I rebooted and the update was being offered again. And I thought, well, that's odd. You know, maybe I did something wrong. I didn't really pay attention during the rebooting process. So I installed it again, rebooted, came back, offered it to me again. And you can, in Windows 8, whatever, and in Windows 10, you can look at your update history. And sure enough, you know, Windows Technical Preview, December update, whatever, KB article, failed to install, failed to install, failed to install. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. And so I actually just pinged Gabe All up on Twitter, the guy from Microsoft who posts about this stuff. And I said, look, I'm having this problem. And it turns out I am one of many, many people having this problem. And so they're gonna fix it in some way. And I don't know if that means we just go back and grab it again. And at some point it works. I keep checking. It's still, you know, I reboot. It doesn't work. It doesn't fix it. But apparently there's a fix for this problem. I just can't get it installed. So maybe in the next 24 hours or so, that will happen.
The best kind of fix is the kind you can install, I find.
Yeah, yeah. And I particularly like how this one, because, you know, I think most people would install it and then go back about their business, not realizing it hadn't, in fact, installed, you know, which would be funny if this wasn't such a huge problem. So hopefully they get that fixed soon.
Very cool. Very cool. And Mary Jo, you wrote a very interesting piece about what's next for Windows 10. I wasn't really expecting new details on Windows 10 this week. But you had a lot of nuggets in here. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So a lot of people are wondering, because Microsoft said in November when they announced the latest technical preview that there would be no more technical previews. What until next year, I should say. What is going to happen between now and then? And so a few things have happened this week. A new build leaked, 9888 leaked, but that is not one of the technical preview builds. And Microsoft's very actively discouraging people from downloading it, because they said, you know what, if it had been stable enough to be deemed ready for the tech preview, we would have sent it out to you guys, but it's not really ready. And there's a couple
they put
things
that last
that,
one out.
Yeah, know? Right. And the last one broke more things, right?
I believe this one to be more stable. But
do you really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is supposedly a partner build, which they give to some of their OEM and other partners, but not to the Windows insiders. And there's not, from what I've been reading from Paul and some of the other sites, there's not a ton new in 9888. The biggest noticeable thing is the kernel version number changes to 10 from 6.4. Mm-hmm. So that is a obvious change, and one that they've said they were going to make, so it's not a surprise. But then there's a couple things they tweaked, I think, with the trying to make the Explorer more stable, and they changed a couple of the context menus. So they did some kind of minor things in that build, but it's not a big giant, like, wow, what, there's a huge new build out or anything like that. The next step is what I think is going to be more interesting. So we've been hearing there's going to be what we've called a consumer preview of Windows 10 coming in January. And I'm hearing from my sources that we're likely going to see that around January 20th, 21st. That there's going to be some kind of an event in Redmond where Microsoft invites certain press and analysts to come. And they're going to show us that build and maybe give us the bits there. They're also going to show us, I hear, the one that we haven't seen yet, which is the mobile version. So this is Windows 10 that will run on Windows phones, on ARM-based tablets, smaller tablets, and also on smaller Intel-based tablets. We don't know what they're going to call that, if it's going to be Windows 10 Mobile or exactly how they'll refer to that SKU. But they're going to show it to us, we hear, at that event. But we may not get the bits that day or even in that vicinity of time, because it sounds like that's a little further behind, that they're only in very early stages of testing that inside the operating systems group. And it may take them a little more time before they deem that that's ready for everybody who's in the insider program to get. So those are the main two kind of things that we're hearing are going to be next. Also, one other thing in January is I think there's going to be the next update to the Windows Server preview. So people who are testing Windows Server Next or Windows Server 10, whatever you want to call that, got a build of that October 1st. But anyone who's testing that hasn't gotten a build of that since from Microsoft. So I think the next major build of that is also going to be timed around this January event. And maybe we'll hear and see some of that too around that same time.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, do you think that that the mobile versions and the tablet versions of Windows 10 are going to kind of steal the show in the general press, just simply because that's so consumery and this is like kind of such an unusual thing to have, you know, this this more continuation type of rollout of versions of Windows across devices? Do you think that's people are going to really understand the significance of that?
Hopefully they will. And hopefully it'll bring some new things to the party that we haven't heard about or haven't seen. Because the Windows 10 builds that are out right now, they're, you know, originally were called, I think, the Enterprise Tech Preview, or referred to that way when we first heard about them, because they were meant to try to win over business users who had been very reluctant to put Windows 8 on their machines. So I think this one, the coming Windows Mobile one, will be of more interest to people with Windows phones, and also of interest to people who are really into touch tablets and want to see what Microsoft's doing there to try to differentiate itself from Android and iPads.
And just if I could just flip that on its head a little bit, I mean, I think one of the things that's really interesting about Windows 10 is that even in its current form, it's a return to the classic PC, the desktop PC. And I think there's some value there for consumers as well. I mean, I think part of the indecision over the past couple of years was that people didn't necessarily like the Windows 8 tablet stuff. And, you know, Chromebooks have come along. They're stealing share from iPad and from Windows. And I think the return to a version of Windows that is applicable to a keyboard-based computer is going to resonate with people as well. And, of course, we have all these cheap options there, HP Stream and so forth. And so the consumer thing is very interesting. I mean, to me personally, and I really care about what they do on the phone and on the tablet, but sometimes I wonder if we haven't already seen the most important stuff, you know, in a way, because this is what's going to keep people from jumping ship potentially to Chromebook, this and the inexpensive licensing of Windows.
Now, Paul, why doesn't Microsoft come out with a Microsoft Chromebook type of cloud-based device? I mean, they've got so many cloud offerings. And the reason I think the most compelling reason for it, I think we're hearing in the news these days, is the education market. Right now, the Chromebook is just running away with the education market. In the olden days, companies like Apple used to really target the education market, because today's students are tomorrow's executives and buyers. And so if you can get their hearts and minds, whether in school, you can sort of maintain them as a customer, theoretically. And so finally, this most recent quarter is the first quarter ever where Google Chromebooks have exceeded Apple iPads in the education market. And momentum is all behind the Chromebook. So why wouldn't Microsoft showcase its cloud offerings in a cloud-based dumb terminal?
Yeah. So I was literally just thinking about this earlier today. And the reason is because Surface was such a disaster for them from the perspective of partner relations. One of the reasons every single PC maker on earth is making Chromebooks right now is because of Microsoft making Surface and basically competing with them on a product line they used to partner with them on. Now, Surface is a high-end computer, relatively speaking. And of course, it's a kind of a new kind of computer too. If they were to compete directly with the kind of bread and butter part of the Windows market, especially after they've done this $0 licensing to help those partners be able to put Chromebook priced computers into the marketplace that run Windows, I think that would be a disaster. And so I think the way that Microsoft could help that movement would be to help promote Dells and HPs and Lenovos and whoever else's computers that are in the $200 to $300 to $400 range and get those computers into education. Because I think there's a really compelling story there that they're just as inexpensive. Modern computers running Windows 8 Plus can be managed with the same sort of mobile device management technologies that Chromebooks and Android devices are managed with. And, you know, they run Office. They run real Office. They connect to printers. You know, they're just a more natural kind of productivity device that people are familiar with. And now that the price has come down, I think that could happen. But I don't think Microsoft doing that with a, you know, a Surface branded device or whatever would be the right approach at this point because of what happened before.
I can see them doing something creative in that space, though. I can imagine, for example, building into Windows a mode where you can just reboot into a cloud only mode.
And, sure.
And you know, you have to hand maybe some, you want to hand your laptop over to a child or to somebody at your workplace that you don't necessarily trust. It might be nice to sort of go into that mode where they can't break anything, they can't really download anything significant, they can't execute anything.
Arguably, that sort of exists. I mean, you know, they obviously have educational offerings. Microsoft account and eventually domain accounts will do exactly what you're asking. I mean, you can restrict what they can install, what they see, and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's kind of there. It's not quite as simple as what's available on the Chrome side, but I think the upside is still a legitimate benefit, you know, the Microsoft Office type stuff, the ability to run full-blown Photoshop if you want to do that. Obviously there are trade-offs. You know, simplicity is nice because it's simpler, but simpler is not always a positive. I mean, simpler sometimes means that functionality is missing as well. So Chromebooks make more sense in education than iPads. But I think that Windows PCs make more sense than Chromebooks, especially when the price is the same or different, and given some of the improvements that have happened in Windows 8 and then will be happening in Windows 10 around management and those type of environmental issues that you raised.
Well, it's better than, cloud-based systems are better than pen and paper, which is what Sony Pictures employees had to resort to after being hacked. Yeah. Now, there's a Windows-based hack that possibly came, and I'm sorry, Paul, I'm dying to talk about this story, as we talked about before, the show, okay. but this is an opportunity. So, essentially, let me just summarize the story here. So, basically, 8 days ago, Sony Pictures Entertainment had a catastrophic hack, and two things happened. First thing was that tons of documents were stolen. Personnel records, movie screeners, which were promptly posted on the pirate networks, and now Fury is probably the number one downloaded thing on BitTorrent, even though it's still in theaters. In some cases, also Annie, which is a remake of the musical, hasn't even come out yet, and it's already very popular on BitTorrent, thanks to possibly North Korea. The beef that North Korea may have had is that Sony Pictures came out with a Seth Rogen and James Franco comedy called The Interview, where two hapless journalists are sent by the CIA to go to North Korea and execute the leader there. So they didn't like that. They threatened retaliation. They said it was an act of war, and then Sony Pictures Entertainment got hacked. So the documents are downloaded. And then the next thing that happened was there's a sweet piece of malware that erased the hard drives, including the boot records, so that they couldn't recover. And so for several days, Sony Entertainment employees were literally using pen and paper at work. I don't even think I would know how to do that anymore. I guess the paper is with some sort of solid state storage device, and I don't really understand it, but they were doing that. And now, instead of, you'd think, okay, well, they're going to go in there and they're going to fix the computers and get them back reinstalled and put their backup in there and get them back up and running. No, they're actually issuing new computers to employees. It's a catastrophic failure, but you can imagine if there was some kind of like some mode where you could go into a cloud-only interface, at some point. I don't know if that's a solution. It probably isn't, but it would be nice to have some kind of fallback where you'd have this hyper-protected environment where people could at least access their cloud-based documents and so on. I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big, well, not the big issue. One of the big issues with this is that there's all the reason I think that they're replacing the PCs is that there's some incredible new form of malware on there that they're afraid is going to get out into the world beyond Sony's PCs. And the FBI has stepped in Homeland Security has stepped in, and they've actually secretly warned the security departments of major corporations around the country, that this has happened. They didn't identify Sony. It's obviously Sony. And that to be on the lookout for this kind of malware that could spread beyond Sony. And I don't think it's coincidental that North Korea threatened retaliation. I use some awesome language because, you know, North Korea is crazy. But they described it as, you know, undisguised terrorism and a war action, like you said. And this is what happens when James Franco makes a movie.
Yeah, it's, you know, really ill-advised. He really shouldn't make movies for national security sake, of course. And for all of our sakes, really. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, South Park went to town on Kim Jong-un's father, some years ago. I don't believe there was any retaliation then. Maybe they just didn't have the electronic capability.
Team America was the name of the movie I think you're referring to, and it was hilarious. Another interesting aspect, and there's so many interesting elements to the story, but one of them is that the actual hackers came from China, and I think there was some kind of mercenary hackers or a secret rogue wing of a North Korean organization doing it from China. So it's probably very difficult to have a great group of hackers in North Korea because kids don't grow up with computers there. So it's not,
they don't have electricity.
Exactly. They don't have electricity. They don't have computers. Sure. They don't have the internet. They don't have some of the basic building blocks that lead to a healthy, malicious hacker culture. So so they got to outsource it.
You must have seen this. There are shots of Korea from space. At night, and you can see all this light in China around it, and you can see all this light in South Korea, and then North Korea is basically blacked out.
Yeah, it's a horrible thing. And when visitors go to Pyongyang, the capital, they light up the parts where the visitors go,
right.
And so on. It's weird. You need a passport just to go from one town to the next. It's a dark and horrible place, and they really don't like James Franco. So
so you got to be careful.
Yeah. So what are you going to do? I don't know. Mary Jo, if you have any thoughts on this. I mean, the number of hack attacks that are happening these days, it's gotten to the point, and, you know, Leo's referred to it as breach fatigue, but there's so many stories about catastrophic hacks. They've recently discovered that the Iranians have been having their way with the airline industry and defense companies for 2 years, and nobody noticed. It's just awful. Is there anything Microsoft can bring to bear? Because of course, Microsoft Windows systems can do a lot more than other platforms, generally speaking, and they can do a lot more for malicious hackers too. So, what can Microsoft do? I think to deal with this larger issue of everybody getting hacked.
I don't know what they can do, but
30 seconds to solve this problem, Mary Jo. I know you
can
do it.
Okay, here we go. The one thing we do know from some of the leaks we've heard is they're doing a lot of things with Windows 10 under the covers around security, and they haven't really gone public with a lot of these things yet. I think that's something else we're going to hear when we see that January preview, that they're going to start talking about some of those things, because they know, just like everybody else knows, you know, they need to harden the operating system. And I think they have been working on that, actually, probably in conjunction with some of the chip makers and the hardware makers, to come up with more secure solutions. So, I don't think we'll go back to like Palladium and Ingstub, if you guys remember those things. But I think we will start to see them do more around that specifically to harden systems and to do it in conjunction with the people who are making the hardware. That's all I know, which is nothing. So,
all right. Yeah, I mean, I there's stuff in Windows 10 coming and all that. And then in Windows 8, obviously, they made the new app model, which has a security and reliability kind of aspect to it, which I think is important. But, you know, the fact remains, the PC is a legacy platform. It's this heaping mountain of stuff that keeps getting more and more complicated as we go forward because they keep adding on to it. And it's you don't often get a chance to start completely over, like, say, Google sort of did with Chrome OS, right? It's basically a lightweight version of Linux, I guess. But, you know, this is part of the reason why they're trying to shed legacy code more quickly than they did in the past. It's part of the reason why, as of next year, they want people on IE to only be able to have the most recent couple of versions, not the last five or six versions. I mean, there's all this stuff that they're trying to do. But, you know, change is hard when your user base resists. when Microsoft stopped supporting Windows XP back in April, there were hundreds of millions of people still using that operating system. You know, it's hard. You can't just issue an edict and expect the world to come along with you. You know, it's kind of a complicated topic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's always been the double-edged sword of Windows. You know, it's the complexity versus capability. And, of course, like you said, the capability applies to both those who are malicious and those who are not.
Yeah, and the weakest link is always the user. And, of course, Microsoft, right, as a user-facing operating system, has always had this sort of pendulum swing where they have one version of Windows that's like super locked down, asking for permission for every single little thing. And then everybody complains because it's like, oh, this is really a hassle. And so the next version comes out and it's super simple and streamlined. And then it's easier to, you know, to have malicious code running on it because they're not asking for permission for everything. And then it swings back and forth. And so there's really no perfect solution possible, basically, as you intimated, that because of the nature of Microsoft. They're super legacy, they're super enterprise, they're super everybody operating system, and they, you know, they run, they can execute code, and that's always a challenging thing. And I don't know what the solution is, but it certainly does provide a lot of news for my other show. That's all I'm saying. And so I guess there's a silver lining there. So why don't we talk about Windows Phone? Is Windows Phone really going to make gain ground in the low end of the market? Is this a kind of phone that is going to be able to penetrate the sort of the mind share of Android and to a lesser extent on the low end, iOS and Apple? Or is this just going to muddle around and on the periphery forever? What do you think, Paul?
I think it muddles around in the periphery. I think it's too bad in a way, because I still prefer Windows Phone. I understand Microsoft's direction and why they would focus on the low end of the market. And the low end of the market, you know, when people hear that, I mean, I think a lot of people imagine like inexpensive phones, obviously, but, you know, that they're going to walk into Best Buy or AT&T or something, and their choice is going to be a $600 iPhone or a $99 Windows Phone. And that's actually not the point of it, although you will see that kind of stuff too. It's to go to after the next billion or the next 2 billion or whatever the audience is. The group of people are coming up in other parts of the world who don't have computers, never have, and that this phone may be their first and only computing device going forward. And those kinds of people are not influenced necessarily yet by Apple's marketing, by Android or that kind of stuff. And they'll make their decision based on very different criteria than we do here in the United States. That said, I mean, obviously Google is going after that part of the market as well with Android One, and I'm sure they'll be very successful with that. But it's hard because there are some tremendous, or hard as an enthusiast, because there are wonderful features in Windows Phone. And they're got over the years, as people kind of ignore the platform, it gets watered down a bit. Android and iOS pick up some of those features. And then Microsoft only sees some success in the low end. And so they focus on those kind of devices, which is not what we want. And it's this kind of, what's the opposite of a virtuous cycle? it's something that feeds on itself, you know, in a way. It's too bad. All I can say is Microsoft and formerly Nokia made and makes wonderful low-end devices. The phone that I use right now is arguably kind of a low-end device, or at least a mid-level device. It's not like a flagship, you know, awesome phone. It doesn't really stand up to a new iPhone or a Note 4 or anything like that. But, I mean, even, you know, I have my choice. I could use anything I want, and I still prefer to use it. There's still some amazing value to it. But, you know, again, we live in the United States. It's hard. Like, I can communicate what I think about these devices, but it doesn't really matter. I don't think most people here are going to own these things. So it reminds me of being an Amiga fan in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, the best we could come up with was, you know, well, it's popular in Europe, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to take your word on that. I don't live in Europe. Yeah, I don't know.
It's not a purse. It's European.
Yeah. Well, it was really interesting for me being in Stockholm and then Copenhagen in the past few weeks, because you do see so many more Windows phones, and in those places you're not just seeing low end phones, you're seeing all levels of phones there. So I think here we just kind of have this feeling that, you know, we know we're the 3% or the 2.9% or whatever we are now who are Windows phone users.
It's like being a soccer fan in the United States.
It kind of is. <You know. Yeah. laughs> But I think, you know, I think the one thing I believe they still are going to have to make at least one flagship phone, or continue with that to some extent, because it's kind of a thing where you have to have that available to people to be your evangelists almost, you know, people like us who say, hey, this is the best phone you can get. And this week there were some leaked renders. I don't know if any of those are real, but it looks like they are working on a successor to the 1020. Is that right?
It would be to the 1020, but the only problem I have with that theory is that, and I want it to be true. You know, it's like Sasquatch. I'd like to think that this hairy monster man thing is living out
you
the woods.
You want Sasquatch to exist.
Yeah, I want that to be real. But, you know, we also get that usage data from Ad Duplex, and they have seen nothing that equates to this device in testing in the world. And just turning it on and connecting it to the internet and downloading an app would get it in there somewhere. And so... that, and for that and other reasons, I kind of doubt that. I want to believe there's a 1030 happening, you know?
Yeah.
Santa Claus is real, right? We're not going to...
Oh, yeah.
You know,
we're not going to mess with that.
The McLaren, the one codenamed McLaren, that phone that was supposed to have the ability to hover over it and it would react with your gestures without you touching the phone. I think that was a real phone at some point. But I don't know if this... thing that we keep seeing in renders is that, or if it's something else, or if they've totally scrapped McLaren, or if they're redoing McLaren, but they have to wait for Windows Phone 10. So we just are kind of in a limbo state right now. If you're a Windows Phone user and you're hoping for something new, there just isn't anything new other than the lower end.
Right. And I don't mean to say I have to sort, you know, you have to sort of try to generate excitement, because some of the stuff is genuinely interesting, but again, it's that opposite of the virtuous cycle thing. I mean, from the perspective of the carriers, you know, none of the high-end Windows phones since the 920, which is a couple of years now, 2 years old now, have ever sold at all. They don't want to put a lot of these things in stock, take up the space in the store. You know, no one's going to buy these things anyway. And it just kind of feeds on itself. You know, even in the United States, if you look at the usage, when you add it up, it's all the low-end phones. If you take the 920 out of the equation, which is, again, a couple of years old and is still being used because those people don't have a viable upgrade, it's all low-end phones. It's 520s, it's 521s, it's 620s, 630s, 635, et cetera. That's what everyone is using, basically. And they're buying these things at GoPhone or whatever Verizon's version of GoPhone is. And that's, you know, that's what people do, T-Mobile, whatever. That's too bad. It's just a tough thing to invest. It's like, you know, I'm sure Ford builds, you know, incredible Mustang race car type things, but they only sell like 17 of them. They sell a lot of the, you know, 4-6-cylinder versions, whatever they have these days. And that's what, you know, that's just the reality of the business.
Okay. So I'd like to sort of put you guys on the spot about something. This is an Uber theory that I've been obsessing about for several years. And here it is.
Okay. Right.
So my belief about Microsoft's problem in the consumer and mobile markets is not about the quality of their products, but about the timing of their products, and especially in relation to Apple's products. So, for example, I think most people can agree that the Zune eventually became a fantastic device, but it was too late because Apple had gigantic mind share. They had iTunes, a music industry locked up. It was just too late. But if, you know, people who went to look at the Zune were like, hey, this is like really great. This would have been great. Like, you know, a year ago,
there are still people who pine away that it's gone. Yeah.
I do. And then I'm one of them.
Yeah. And then the same thing happened with Windows Phone. The same thing happened with the Surface. They were always behind Apple and behind not just Apple's products, but behind the reality distortion field, the massive marketing, the massive fanboy love fest that accompanies every new Apple launch. And it's just, how do you touch that? Yeah. I mean, the Surface is a great device that's too late. That all the Windows phones are great.
This actually ties into something I obsess over, which is basically the same topic, but kind of approached from a slightly different angle, which is that if you go back just about a decade, a little bit over a decade, you know, Microsoft had its antitrust problems in the United States and then in Europe. And then they did Longhorn, which threw them off the track. I think was the last, you know, Microsoft's last decade right there was antitrust plus Longhorn. Previous to that, they kind of set the agenda. if somebody said that they were working on something that sounded like it might be interesting, Microsoft would just say, oh, by the way, we're working on something just like that too. And that might be enough to throw off interest in this other thing that was, in fact, probably innovative and original. But because of that lost decade, it allowed smaller or faster moving companies, Google and Apple primarily, but also Amazon and some other companies, to really push forward in ways that wouldn't have been possible had Microsoft had that kind of stranglehold on the market like they used to. And so they've been put in this kind of an awkward position. And so we saw those products you just described. I think we're all falling very neatly, you know, Zune, Surface, et cetera, are reactions to market forces. You know, oh, people are using tablets. Let's turn Windows into a tablet OS. You know, they're reacting. They're not setting the agenda. And, you know, people who remember Microsoft in the heyday and were fans of that kind of stuff obviously would like Microsoft to turn things around. But it's going to require them to actually lead in some ways. Okay. And, of course, they do things like that, but they're small. They're not major.
Okay, you know, so this gets us to the central theme of my obsession, which mm-hmm. is the area where I think they can lead. And I think, yep. and here it is, essentially.
Okay.
And if you work at Microsoft out there, you
please
listen to this, because I really believe in this. I believe that the future of the desktop, especially in companies, but also in the consumer market, is going to involve gigantic touchscreens. Now, a lot of people disagree with this because they say, oh, gorilla arms and it's awkward and stuff like that. Sure. No, I think the combination that Microsoft's been obsessing about for many years, the combination of touch, of in-the-air gestures, of voice control, and of artificial intelligence agents like Cortana, that combination is going to be favorable to a giant TV-sized touch device that can flip up to become the presentation device or the TV or the movie projector, that can go flat to be an interactive display for multiple people to use at once, and to go into a drafting angle for individual use, for moving around life-size documents, place the keyboard right on the thing, it recognizes the keyboard. Microsoft tells all this technology. They own Perceptive mm-hmm. Pixel, they own Pixel Sense. They've got it all locked up. All they need to do is stop being so weird about this category. I've contacted Microsoft about Pixel Sense, Perceptive Pixel. I've asked them, and like, we have no comment at this time. It's like, what if Microsoft next year, next summer, came out with a consumer Pixel Sense device of some kind that cost $3,000 and was a giant touchscreen that like automatically detected your identity from your phone and did all kinds of cool stuff? They would lead the market. That would be their iPad. That would be their iPhone, right?
Right.
Or am I wrong about that? Would that not be a compelling platform they could actually lead?
I would argue this sort of heading in that direction. I mean, that phone thing you just mentioned is part of Windows 10. Some of their partners are creating home smaller versions of this. But in other words, you think about a tablet. Tablets typically go up to 13 inches at the most. You know, there are partners like Dell and HP and Lenovo, and I've got a Lenovo here that make, you know, 18 or 20 or 22 inch. I don't even call them, but it's basically a giant tablet. It has a stand in the back, keyboard and mouse. You can carry it around. You're not going to go on a plane with it, but it's something you use around the home. And they have goofy little, like, you know, like how air hockey works, but you do it with touch. And so you can use your fingers if you want, but you could also use special controllers that kind of glide on the glass. And it gives you that kind of interactive thing, two people doing something at the same time. It's, you know, again, a consumer thing, not a business scenario, but I think the market is sort of heading there on its own. You know, I mean, we'll see. This kind of device, you know, phablets are a big deal. Mini tablets are a big deal. This is in many ways another form of a crossover hardware device when you think about it.
I think they're building this for sure, because they said just a couple months ago, I forget who it was. It may have been Stephen Elop who said it. We're in the midst of mass producing Perceptive Pixel devices now. So it's going to be something like that, but I think it's just such a stupid idea. I know they're going to do it because it's so dumb and ridiculous. It's just, to me, it's like, oh my God, here we go. Windows 8, like those big ass Windows 8 tablets that no one's like one, you know, people might want for a home.
Well, it is something that Apple's not doing. I think there's something to be said for that.
I guarantee you Apple is going to do this within the next 4 years. They are going to have a huge, the iMac is going to become an iOS device. I mean, it's there is no question in my mind. All the signs are there. They're moving everybody, nudging them toward that on the user interface. And instead of Mary Jo, instead of thinking of it as a computer replacement, think of it as a everything Surface replacement. What if the Surface of your desk was an interactive Windows machine? How cool that would be.
It's cool from computing.
Yeah, it's cool from like a look at this cool thing perspective, and totally impractical from doing real work.
I don't know.
I'm the practicalian. That's not a word, but I'm the person who's like, you know what? I would love to see Microsoft do
a practicalian.
I want them to fix keyboards, batteries, and mice because that is what people use to do work. Yeah.
35-year-old technology. The WIMP system is 35 years old. It's a Victorian contraption. I think that kids today are growing up on touch devices. They're going to look at mice and go, they're going to see it as a controller.
That's probably true. But I mean, until voice recognition gets good enough.
You're using an Excel spreadsheet. You want a mouse.
I'm sure there were people who resisted the word processing and then computers because they liked their IBM Selectric or something. I mean, I certainly can appreciate that.
Remember when we first saw Windows 8, who said, this is so idiotic. Who is going to want these touch screens and who's going to want this interface on their work machines? And guess who was right? Me.
All right.
Sorry.
Windows 10 was your idea.
You know what?
Yeah, no, you were, yes.
You know what I'm saying.
Certainly confirm that report, but.
This is fun. This is cool and fun, and it's like Star Wars. Yeah, but it's not real. Yeah. It's like
Windows 8 to me was just goofy. Like I thought, had someone smaller than Microsoft come out with Windows 8, it wouldn't have been very interesting. The fact that Microsoft was doing this just made it kind of hilarious. Like they're going to force this on people. This is going to be amazing. You know, I just sort of enjoyed it like you would enjoy like roller derby. You know, But that said, I mean, for example, like I don't think like Surface Pro 3 is a typical example. Surface Pro 3 is a pretty good ultrabook, unless your goal is to put it on your lap. But it's a pretty good ultrabook. Using a touchscreen just for scrolling while you're reading content is actually very enjoyable and very natural, even on a traditional form factor device. I think that in the future, Mike sort of walked around this a little bit, but this notion that you're going to walk into any room. And if it's at work, you know, you're recognized, the stuff that you have permissions for are available. You know, ultimately the thing we might be laughing at in the future isn't so much the particulars of it, the mouse or the 8-track tape or whatever. It's that anyone carried any device of any kind with them. Like, why would you bother? Because this stuff will just be available everywhere in whatever form you want it. When you sit down on a plane, you'll be recognized. Your HBO subscription will be available. Your work documents will be if you want to type on the tray table. You know, I think that kind of stuff is where this heads.
Absolutely. Now, there are two technologies that I think that Microsoft has that are killer. And one of them is that they have technology that enables the screen itself to be a scanner. So you take a piece of paper, you lay it flat on the table, and it's now in your database. Instantly searchable. They also have incredible gestures that combine touch and pen. So you have a stylus in one hand and touch in the other, and you can do amazing things. We've seen the videos of that. But I think the bigger picture that I've been inspired by, actually, not just the videos of Jeff Hahn, who's he's the founder of Perceptive Pixel, and who I think still works for Microsoft after the acquisition. But Microsoft itself has a bunch of vision videos that include this technology. And let's take a look at this one. So you have essentially a touchscreen based on glass, so it's see-through. And I think this is a killer app for this technology if it could be made to work like this. And of course, that's essentially the Xbox of the future, where you're essentially doing this Skype. Imagine Skype actually working and like being like seamless and high def like that. It would be fantastic. Alex, can you go a little bit forward in this document where they're doing touchscreen stuff that's really and table surface? So here's an example of another window with this stuff. And again, there's a lot of interaction with the mobile devices that people are carrying, seamless data transfer from one to the other. And of course, voice control in the air gestures is being demonstrated now. This is breathtaking stuff. And I don't see any way that this isn't going to happen. If you just follow Moore's law.
If you haven't done it, and I haven't done this in years, so I don't even know how it's improved, but Microsoft has a home of the future at their campus that you can visit. And it has a lot of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's the type of thing where you open the refrigerator, and as you pass milk in and out, it knows how far the milk is going down, and it knows to reorder it automatically. Or it knows what kind of, you put down some ingredients on the table and say, I need to make dinner. This is the basics of what I have. What can we make with this? And it gives you recommendations, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, I got to say, the thing everybody always thinks is Microsoft is always late to the party. You know what? They're always too early to the party. They're not too late. Look at Windows 8. They were too early with that, I would argue.
Oh, look at the tablet PC.
One of those things. Like, they have to do research in this, but if they roll this out next year, there's going to be write-downs, just like there were on those Surface tablets. Mark my words.
Yeah, I think Windows 8 is too early in the sense that they tried to get people to embrace a new kind of interface that was touch-centric and so on, but they kind of did it half-assedly and from the top down. Apple did it right, I think, from the bottom up. Yeah. They started the very first consumer, well, the very first available touchscreen from a major company was the original Microsoft Surface product, which was a coffee table for casinos that, you had to customize it and stuff. It wasn't a consumer product, but that shipped between the time when Steve Jobs announced the iPhone and the time that Apple shipped the iPhone. And then the iPhone was actually the first consumer broad-based multi-touch device from a major company. They were beat to market by a couple of things.
I mean, ultimately, Windows 8 and Surface, at their heart, were reactions to trends. You know, that, and these may be apocryphal type stories, but, you know, the guys from Microsoft went to CES and saw everyone touching the screens, even the screens that weren't touch screens, and said, oh my God, it's all multi-touch. We got to go touch. And, you know, the credit that should be given to them is that they were able to actually turn Microsoft on a dime, which is kind of incredible. But to their detriment, they made the wrong decision. You know, they really kind of blew it, unfortunately. The feeling was everyone's going to want to touch things, you know. Yeah, maybe they will. This is not in 2010.
Research, you have to do research. You have to do concept videos. But the trick is knowing when the market's ready for this stuff. And you it's a fine line, right? You have to not be late. But if you're early, you're going to have just as many problems. And don't be fooled. Microsoft's business is enterprise. 90 some odd percent of their business is enterprise. Those guys do not want this. Nope. Yeah. They don't.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
I think they'll want it once the consumers, whatever, I'm not talking about this particularly, but once everybody in the general culture is using something, the enterprise people will want those interfaces as a front end to their enterprise stuff. And we're years away from this. Let's face it. And these big tablets are going to put things off, people off of the idea of big tablets. But I think there's something. I'm just really personally inspired by Perceptive Pixel, by Pixel Sense. By these video concept videos, I believe in it. I think that it taps into core things about human nature that are never going to change and are really going to thrill people if they can get it right. So I'm rooting for it, and I think this is Microsoft's big chance, maybe the last chance in the next decade to really lead again, and not, you know, because if Apple comes out with something like this and then they follow 2 years later with the consumer version, it's going to be the Windows phone all over again. So that would be a tragedy. Okay, enough. I think this horse has been dead for a while.
It's a good conversation to have because it brings up, you know, the difference between, like, you want to be ahead of the curve and you want to, like, lead and look like you're ahead in the market, but knowing the right time to get in and with the right product and the right price we should throw in there.
Yeah. Right? I mean, really, it's the old Microsoft story. They are the platform for everybody, and that is their curse and their blessing at the same time. Right. So it's very difficult to, force everybody into a completely new way of doing things, abandoning the past, because then you're not really doing what Microsoft does, which is, you know, not to cutting people off at the knees and so on. All right, so let's talk about Microsoft Office. Should we shed a tear for the death of Clipart?
I don't know why anyone noticed.
I know. Yeah. I thought clip art had been gone for a while. So when I saw them write a blog post saying, hey, we're phasing out clip art, I'm like, wait, I thought that was gone already.
Yeah.
Doesn't everybody use search engines?
You see it in there. I mean, it's they have, I'm looking now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, why use clip art when you can just steal perfectly good photographs?
Yeah.
Or use ones, you know, that let you use them for free with Creative Commons licenses, right? Yeah. So much better.
Yeah. I mean, clip art is the, you know, when printers first went radically mainstream, everybody started saying, wow, look at all these fonts and colors that I could use. And then documents suddenly became horrible. And clip art is the sort of the version of that where you could put in very tasteless, cheesy things. And it's awful. I don't think anybody, you know, it's like Facebook posts. Everybody wants to do it, but they don't want to get it, you know.
I just went into Word. You can still insert clip art from office.com in Word. So I don't know what the plan is. I assume they're going to, phase it out.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, so I just did it. So someone did it this year. So I don't know why they're getting rid of it.
All right, Paul. So I have a question for you, Paul. Last night, I finally relented, and my wife and I went to Best Buy and bought my son an Xbox One. And so he has been using Xbox 360 for a long time. So what do you, and we didn't get the Kinect version. So there's a whole bunch of things off the table. I'm sort of on the fence about maybe getting that.
Cause
I love all the Skype stuff and the voice command and all that stuff. But anyway, what do you recommend as a, you know, he's had it for less than 12 hours or whatever it is, 15 hours. What do you recommend for him? What should he do?
How old is he?
He's 25.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that makes it a little easier.
Yeah, I'm pretty much out of the woods.
Well, I don't know. I mean, what do you mean? From like a gaming perspective or from entertainment?
I mean, he'll figure out the games. He's going to have all the big shoot 'em ups there.
Yeah.
But what else would you recommend for him to, like, he kind of wants to use it almost like his PC and his sort of cable box to the greatest extent possible. What do you think? What information could he use that would be surprising to him that would be awesome?
Right. So because I this is one of those things, I'm speaking almost theoretically because my Xbox One is in my home office. It's not connected to a TV or a TV signal or whatever. But I think one of the big advantages to this console is the HDMI pass-through capabilities.
Yeah.
You could throw another console through there if you had like a PS4 or something. But I think the real thing you do with that is you do like a TV pass-through. And it integrates your, you know, cable guide with the guides that are kind of electronically created from online services. And so it commingles those things into a single entertainment guide, which I think is a really cool feature. I mean, the problem is, I mean, I use mine very specifically for video gaming. Although it's interesting that you mentioned this now, because I was just literally thinking about putting this out in the living room. Because a lot of the guys that I play video, sometimes we get together, physically in the same house and play with other people. And most of those guys still have 360s, you know. And I was thinking, I'm not going to cart this thing around. You've seen it. I mean, it's gigantic. It's like a Surface table. So, you know, why not just throw it in the living room and do all that kind of stuff? I'm not a big fan of the Kinect gesture stuff. I am a huge fan of the Kinect voice control stuff. I actually think that's important. In fact, I think it's so important that it should be separated from the Kinect that there should be a separate microphone for that purpose, because speaking to your TV or to your, you know, to the console is somewhat transformative. That's kind of a big deal. So if you've ever used something like Chromecast, you know, the doorbell rings, the phone rings, whatever it is, someone needs to go to the bathroom. You need to wake up your device, log in, go back to the screen, pause, you know, just being able to say it is actually kind of a big deal.
Do you think they're going to integrate Cortana into Xbox anytime soon?
Yeah. Yep, I think Windows 10 is going to do that across the board, tablet, phone, and Xbox, and that's the same. I mean, you can already do that kind of thing. I mean, it's almost like just a branding change, really. But I think making it a consistent experience across the device types maybe will be the big benefit there.
And what about music? What about Xbox music for one?
So I actually like Xbox music. I know Mary Jo does as well. It's fine on the console. I mean, there are some other options there, but Xbox Music with Xbox Music Pass in particular, because that gives you opens up the entire catalog, I think is a big deal. I mean, Xbox Video is fine for renting movies. I wouldn't buy anything with it, but you can, you know, for renting movies, great. Obviously, 1080p, whatever, it's beautiful. All the major services are on there. There will be kind of NAS DLNA type streaming coming. There's a beta app that's out now. I'm trying to remember how that works exactly. I think that right now it only works with local files on USB. So if you have like an external hard drive, you can plug it in and it will read that stuff. But there's a bunch of goofy things that aren't available yet on this console that were available on the 360, you know, the ability to plug in a, like a keyboard, for example, so you can type, you know, if you have to type in a login or something. They don't have a chat controller or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, I think this thing will evolve over time, but
All right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I use it for games, so yeah. It's kind of, yeah. I have to kind of think about that. But
Very interesting use of the Xbox for games.
That's yeah, I know. Well, I'm told that this is the minority use of it these days.
I see.
Yeah.
And speaking of Xbox Music, I understand that you wrote about some updates for Xbox Music for Windows Phone 8.1.
Windows 8.1 was completed early in the year, I think in April, and it came with a version of Xbox Music, which was a disaster. Microsoft later apologized, admitted it was beta quality. They should have shipped it as a beta. And then they've spent the rest of the year improving it. And to the tune of, I believe they've released actually 12 updates to this app this year, mostly focused on adding a few missing features, but shoring up the reliability and all that kind of stuff. In the latest update that came out this week, which is just basically fixes, you know, for things like performance and reliability and, you know, a couple of goofy missing things. They said something interesting, because actually this update wasn't all that interesting, which was that, you know, we'll do a few more of these, but really right now the team is focused on Windows 10. And I thought that was interesting in a note about phone, because, you know, one of the things that I think Mary Jo was first on and we've talked a lot about since is that there's no Windows Phone 10, right? It's going to be Windows 10.
Yeah.
And you see these kind of implicit acknowledgments of this everywhere. And so presumably, you know, Windows 10 will have this Xbox Music app, which we don't see today in the builds, but that is a universal app that works consistently across phone, tablet, and PC. And I think that's what they were trying to say, that they're working on that now. Mm-hmm. And that will benefit the Xbox too, by the way. You know, if you're familiar with Xbox Music or any of these Microsoft apps, today, what you will see is a different app. You know, there's a OneDrive app on phone, there's one on Xbox, there's one on Windows, they're different. And in the future, these things should all be universal apps. They may expose different features, and they may look different on the different platforms, obviously, but they'll be the same app, and that will ensure a consistent level of reliability, but also functionality, or generally functionality. And that will be nice on the Xbox in particular, because, you know, the Xbox Music app is fine for whatever it is on Xbox One today, but it's also designed to be more of a streamer. You know, it doesn't assume or even allow you to put a bunch of music on a hard drive and that's your collection. I mean, the assumption is you're using the cloud. And, you know, the way you use it on a PC is very different. The way you use it on the phone is very different. And I think in the future, those things will be more consistent.
Awesome. Well, in just a sec, we're going to come back with listener Q&A. We're going to let you put Mary Jo and Paul on the spot. But first, I want to take a break and talk about Carbonite. We're talking about all these security issues. Every time I do any sort of show, whether it's this show or whether it's the tech news show that we do every morning, there's always security hassles. And there are a couple of things about security and about the danger to your files that malware and other problems can cause, which is that, number one, you find out about it always when it's too late. It's too late to do anything about it after you've been hacked. And the second thing is that people tend to have a rosy sense of what's going to happen if they don't automate things. For example, people think they're going to do a manual backup or something that has to be triggered by the user action. You know, the truth is that most people aren't going to do that. And that's why you need a couple of attributes for your backup. It has to be automatic and it has to be in the cloud. Because if something happens, you know, it's the famous story of Francis Ford Coppola, who was backing up to a local drive, and then somebody broke into his house and stole both the laptop and the local drive, and it was all gone. And that's the kind of thing that can happen if you back up locally. Backing up locally is a good idea, as long as you also have the cloud-based backup. And of course, Carbonite is by far the easiest to use cloud backup solution ever. You basically just install it. If you want to tweak it and fine tune exactly what gets backed up and when and how, and you know, you can have it sort of delay your backup if you have important things going on, or you can put it in the background to sort of keep it from using valuable processing. You can do all kinds of things like that. But if you do none of those things, if you simply install it, you're going to be safe and secure with a backup. And when things, you know, hopefully nothing will ever happen to you. Hopefully you'll be the one person in the world for whom nothing horrible happens to your basic system that you use for your personal life and your personal photos and your work and your financial records and all that stuff. But if it does happen, you can basically feel confident that with Carbonite, all your stuff is going to be there and you can simply restore it after you've fixed the problem. And that is incredibly reassuring. You can access your backup files wherever you go, including from a mobile device, which is really cool, actually. So start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code WINDOWS, and that'll get you two free bonus months when you decide to buy. And I know you will, because when you try it, you got to keep using it because, again, so easy to use, so reliable, and you'll have, you know, no matter what happens, you're not going to lose your data. That's the most important thing. That's Carbonite.com, offer code WINDOWS, and I highly recommend Carbonite. I use it myself for all of our devices. Well, kids, it's time for Q&A. Why don't we go through these, and if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and ask the questions, and then you guys can field them, if that works for you.
Yeah, we asked quiz earlier on Twitter, you know, anybody have questions they want us to do live? So some, these are just, I'm just pulling them off Twitter and throwing them up there. So Right. They're in no order or anything.
Probably should have prepped for this.
Nah.
They'll give us that real live Q&A.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start with the first one. Mary Jo, is Microsoft reinventing email? Acompli and more to come. Now, the Acompli acquisition, I guess, was announced this week, right? And it was accidentally, the news of it was accidentally leaked by a Microsoft executive who posted something, then deleted the thing, but the URL was still there, and the URL says Microsoft's acquiring Acompli or something like that. So that was good fun for those of us in the tech press. But anyway, they are, in fact, officially bringing in Acompli. Acompli is a software that lets you sort of snooze your emails and does all other kinds of automated things. And apparently Microsoft's going to maybe build that into Outlook. But are they going to reinvent email? Is this going to, is this a game changer, I guess, for Microsoft's email offerings?
Well, you know, I when I saw that they were buying this company, which does native apps for Android and iOS that work on the back end with Exchange and Gmail and Google Docs and other servers, I was kind of surprised, because whenever we have asked Microsoft, what is your cross-platform strategy for mail? They have told us that it's Outlook web app. And I kind of thought that was their final answer. And I guess it's not their final answer. They seem to have gone back to the drawing board and said, hey, you know what? We should instead have a native app that works cross-platform with different backends. So I'm going to be really interested what they do with this and how this impacts the future of Outlook and also Outlook web app. I don't know if Paul, I think, wrote a long post about this, actually, because you've tried it out even, right?
Yeah. In fact, I tried it out and I recommended that my wife install it. And, you know, I've used it on iPhone. I've used it on Android and iPad as well. What I see in this thing is Outlook as we know it on the desktop, but for mobile devices. It's that combination, that one app that does email, contacts, calendar, and so forth. It also integrates with your online storage, which I think is a neat thing, especially in the context of email, because you can use that to do virtual attachments and stuff and attach very big files that they can then go get from your, you know, your OneDrive or Dropbox or whatever. Now, like you said, Microsoft has this OWA app, actually, and it actually does do that. It's very limited today, and they also have a confusing array of mobile apps. There's, on some platforms, they have an Outlook.com app, and some they don't. On some, they have, actually, I think OWA is on both. They have different clients, and I think what they need is a client, and I think that this is it. I think when people think of Microsoft email, they think Outlook. And I think this is basically Outlook on iOS and Android, and I think that's kind of cool just for that reason. And what I'd like to do is, what I'd like to see is them to port this over to Windows Phone. And
I
guess
I wonder if they will do that
as Outlook, you know, like in other words, this thing becomes Outlook.
Right.
I think so. It's not perfect, by the way. I mean, if anyone has used it and has particular needs, you know, anyone who does things a certain way can always find fault with anything. And so I think one of the things it doesn't do is support multiple calendars, which is a problem for people with multiple calendars, you know, obviously. So there's little things like that, but at broad strokes, it's a pretty impressive application. It's free.
Yeah. Too. And I should have said that that question came from Holger Mueller. I think I'm pronouncing that right. That's where the question came from. Okay, here's another one for Mary Jo. This is from Dean Spencer. Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, Mike, these aren't all for me. I just was collecting them, so that's why my name's on the
Mary
front.
Mary Jo just put your name on everything.
Understood. I'm trying to...
Paul could weigh in here.
No, Mary Jo was the one who was nice enough to ask people for questions. So these are their replies to her, you know, as they would have appeared on Twitter.
But I do believe...
I don't want to take them all.
No, you're going to. Your name is there. I'm going to give them all to you.
Yep.
I'm Ron Burgundy. So this one's from Dean Spencer. And I do think this is should be directed at you, Mary Jo. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Why does Microsoft have different branding for SharePoint and OneDrive for business when it's essentially the same thing?
Yeah, one of the worst named products ever for Microsoft, OneDrive for Business, right? Because OneDrive for Business is not the same as OneDrive Consumer. OneDrive for Business is really the Groove technology Microsoft bought way back when they bought Ray Ozzie's company.
Which was originally called SharePoint. Remember, it was like SharePoint Workspace, I think, or something.
Yeah, SharePoint Workspace, yep.
I think so.
Now there is one team that has OneDrive Consumer, OneDrive for Business, and SharePoint. They all work on the same team, but those three products are different. SharePoint is not the same as OneDrive for Business. OneDrive for Business connects to SharePoint and works with SharePoint, but SharePoint is a lot more than just that. It's super confusing, and I think it was a real bad step for Microsoft to name it OneDrive for Business, but I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to say all of our storage-related things are together now, and they all are going to work in a similar way to the extent that they can. But, yeah, it's confusing.
I personally think that they should rename OneDrive for Business to another drive, comma, this one for business.
SkyDrive Pro.
Microsoft is terrible at naming things, with the exception of Windows, which is the greatest technology product name ever. And then all the other names are horrible. Just an observation.
Yep.
Okay, here's another question for you, Mary Jo. What's Paul's take on the new Star Wars trailer?
Nice.
Paul, what do you think?
I have no idea what his take is.
I loved it. I mean, I want more. I'm so excited that someone cares about Star Wars again, and they're going to do this, and it looks like they're going to do it right, so we'll see. See a lot of, you know, this is another thing, you know, people, we're so negative online, you know, people are like tearing apart little bits of it and stuff. Who cares? This is awesome. I'm so glad they're doing this. You know, I just think it's great.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And, you know, that fact that everybody tears stuff up online is, we've been talking about this in the news recently. There's been a study, I don't recall who did the study, but it's basically points out that the social dynamic, when there's a lot of negative people jumping in, the sort of positive people kind of back off and people jump, you know, get on the bandwagon and start being more negative, and pretty much the negativity sort of takes over and everything becomes negative. So I'm with you, Paul. I like throwing a cheery note of positivity and just boldly coming out and saying that you really love something.
Well, we've all worked in some kind of retail or whatever, a situation where we had to deal with the public, and 9 out of 10 or 99 out of 100 bits of feedback you get are going to be negative. They always are. No one comes in to say thank you or to say, hey, you guys are doing a great job as always. You know, it's always, you know, something went wrong and I'm going to complain about it. And, you know, I think just the whole culture online makes it easier. It's like when people are in cars, they turn into maniacs. I live in the most educated state in the country and it's got the worst drivers in the world. Like, what? How is this possible? You know, because I don't know why. I'm not a psychologist, but it's the same kind of, but you see the same, you know, it's the same thing. It's the way we react online. It's the way people freak out on planes. It's very easy to be negative.
People are horrible. Okay.
People suck. Yeah. I think
bottom line. Yeah. Hey, but you know what? I say every week how grateful I am for Notepad. So we're not all horrible.
That's true. And for Hadoop. You're also very nice about Hadoop.
Hadoop and Notepad, guys.
Mary Jo, you know, I've never got a chance to say this before, but I'm totally with you on Notepad. Greatest single technology product ever created. Because it's the opposite of smart. Yeah. It doesn't think for
it
you.
It
just
job.
Does what it's told.
It looks like you're trying to create a text document. Would you like some help?
That's right. I assume you want this URL to become a live link.
Would you like this
bolded
to be in a fixed font format?
Okay. All right. So here's a question for you, Paul. Somebody's asking, Dirk Mostert is asking if you know whether or not, or have a hunch about whether or not an existing Surface tablet will be upgradable to Windows 10 because he is holding back on buying a new one based on the idea that he might not have to. What do you think?
So Microsoft has actually publicly said that it's exists, at least Surface Pro 3 will be upgradable to Windows 10. I believe Mary Jo just published a story today, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that Windows 10 is an upgrade for anything running Windows RT. So if you have Windows RT, you should be able to upgrade as well. Is that correct, Mary Jo?
Mostly. Although, remember, we asked at the late September Windows 10 preview event in San Francisco about backward compatibility, and they said, we can't guarantee 100% that everything is going to be backwards compatible, but our goal is to make as many things backwards compatible as
we can. Yeah, and I would assume they can...
I wonder about Surface RT, right? The original Surface RT, that's one we don't know. And they wouldn't answer when we asked exactly about that very exact product. So we don't know.
That's an iffy.
Will there be a new Windows 10 RT? This is coming from Tegler27. Any thoughts on that?
So the thing that is currently called Windows RT is what is going to be rebuilt as Windows 10 Mobile, the thing that we're calling that. And what Microsoft's doing is they're taking the Windows Phone OS and Windows RT OS, and they're pushing them together in some way. And what comes out is going to be a single SKU that works on both things.
Hmm. All right.
I know.
How did you describe that combination and not use the word unholy?
I tried to keep that out of it.
A lot of technical lingo on this show. All right, so I think this is a question for Paul. Why doesn't the Xbox Music support OneDrive streaming?
Oh, boy. It will. I keep hearing reports from people. I just got one of these as recently as yesterday where supposedly that's kind of there. I mean, if you were to go back and look at the original Xbox Music announcement, they talked about this feature coming soon. They didn't say OneDrive. It probably would have been SkyDrive at the time, but... they talked about a music locker, you know, and some people have said they've seen a music folder show up in their OneDrive that they didn't create. Some people have said that they've seen OneDrive-based music in Xbox Music. That wouldn't be hard to do on Windows because, of course, OneDrive is probably part of your libraries anyway. But there's no way that's not coming. I mean, it's such an obvious feature. It's so easy to do. If on a Windows PC today, it's kind of, not a Windows 10 because they're screwing up OneDrive, but Windows 8.1, certainly, that's fairly automatic. You know, if it's in OneDrive, you can see it in Xbox Music. With Windows going out to all your devices, I mean, Windows 10, that is, I could see that happening across the board. So I think that happens in a Windows 10 timeframe.
All right. Well, in just a sec, we can come back and do more questions if you guys want to. We can go to the picks if you don't want to. But first, let's take a break because I want to tell you about Squarespace. You know, I've been doing ads for Squarespace for almost all year, but I've been a happy user of Squarespace for several years, a couple of years at least, two or three years, and I absolutely love it. I actually find it more fun than playing an online video game or something like that because it's so easy to use. It's great to go in there and just see what's possible. You just go in there and pick one of their fantastic templates. It's always been super easy to use. But now with Squarespace 7, it's incredibly easy to use because they've added all kinds of really amazing features. Like, for example, I think one of my favorite is that you can preview designs in device mode. So as you're working on your site, you can say, show me what this is going to look like on a phone. And there it is. Boom. And you don't have to pull out your phone and load the page and all that kind of stuff. You can just see it right there on your in your browser, which is really great. It's got a mode now where you basically build your site in the same view so you can see what it's going to look like as you're building it. There, you don't have to toggle between the view of like, okay, now I'm building the site. Okay, now I'm looking at what it's going to look like. None of that gymnastics. It's really, really fantastic, and I absolutely love their designs. I mean, that's really the most important thing, I think, to have a beautifully designed site that looks like it's professionally built, that it's logical and rational the way that it goes from one page to another, the way it looks on mobile devices. And Squarespace just handles all of that for you because of the designs of their templates and the way that they function. For example, they have a template called Horizon that's laid out for bands. They have all these, like, you know, business and sort of activity specific templates for you to choose that sort of work just the way you want them to. If you're a chef or you have a restaurant, they have a bunch for those. If you know somebody who's getting married, you're building a website for them for their wedding, they have six beautiful templates. And again, these templates, you're not locked into these templates at all. You definitely don't need to use their photography or any of that stuff. You can, in fact, use Getty Photography, which you can add directly from the site for just $10 per picture. But you can, once you've selected a template, you can tweak it and change it, change how wide it is, change the color, change the thickness of various things, the size of the font, the actual typography, you change anything you want. But you essentially, the basic building block that you're starting with is a beautiful, beautiful design. Best design you're going to see anywhere online. And of course, Squarespace is mobile ready with multiple apps, the Portfolio, Note, Metric, and Blog mobile apps on iOS and Note and Blog apps on Android. It's fantastic. And, you know, to use it from a mobile device, it's fantastic to see a Squarespace site from a mobile device. It's very, very mobile friendly. And of course, we live in a mobile world, so that's super important. Start a free 2-week trial. No credit card required, and start building your website on Squarespace. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, just use the offer code Windows, and that'll get you 10% off and show your support for Windows Weekly. And to begin using Squarespace 7 for existing users, just go to the Settings tab and activate the new features. They won't activate on their own. They're going to wait until you go in there and give permission for Squarespace for you to get all these goodies. But I highly recommend that you use them if you're currently a user, because they're just so awesome. We thank Squarespace for their support of Windows Weekly. Squarespace, start here and go anywhere. All right, you guys want to do some more questions, or do you want to avoid these questions?
I say a couple more. They're kind of good questions.
Okay, you want to reach into the grab bag and grab the ones you like, because a lot of these are, you know, there's so many here. It's just like, wow.
I want to ask Paul one that I know he will want to answer.
Go for it. What do you think of the Star Wars trailer?
Yes, ma'am.
Paul, will you please comment on Windows Media Center in Windows 10?
Oh.
You're so mean.
I just wanted to make him cry on the air.
We don't know. Media Center could have gone into that list of Zune and, you know, Windows Phone, whatever. We don't know. The indications are that it's not coming, or at best they'll simply allow you to use the existing version of Media Center. I don't think it's going to be an integral part of Windows 10. I don't think it's something they improve, but I have not heard explicitly. When the first preview build appeared, a number of people were very excited that they could install it. You know, in other words, they had acquired it, you know, online when they had Windows 8 or 8.1, and that product key they had or whatever worked fine, it installed. And someone from Microsoft had said that actually that was a mistake, that they didn't intend to allow that. That to me is a warning sign, you know, that it's probably not going to be coming. So I don't know for sure, but my gut is that they're not going to support it, or at the very least, they're not going to improve it.
How about any questions that you want to answer, Mary Jo? Anything in here that jumped out at you?
I see a juicy one I want. Leonardo Sobrato asked about Docker. So let's do the Docker question. What's the Docker story? What's the Docker support story for Windows as it relates to Drawbridge? Microsoft's bullish on Docker, but they're being very silent on Drawbridge. So Docker, the containerization technology, is being built into the next version of Windows Server, we know. It's not there yet. Maybe it'll be there in January. We don't know. But what Microsoft has said is they're going to maintain compatibility with Docker on Linux, and they're working hand-in-hand with the Docker folks on that. A lot of us thought the way they were going to do this on Windows Server was they'd use their own Drawbridge technology that they built in Microsoft Research. And Drawbridge is like library operating system technology, and it lets you kind of get around the whole virtualization conundrum by using this specific technology they've built there. And they've even done some tests where they've shown Drawbridge working on Azure and Drawbridge being able to host different versions of Windows. So it's gone fairly far along. I had a chance to ask Mark Rusinovich, the chief technology officer for Cloud and Enterprise, about this. And I said, aren't you using Drawbridge to put Docker on Windows Server? And what he said was interesting. He said, you know, we're using the principles and the learnings and the thinking, the background thinking around how we handle containers in Drawbridge when we are devising the solution, but we're not using Drawbridge itself. So that's why they've been kind of quiet about it. It was a research project. It never actually became a product, but they're definitely using kind of the thinkings and the learnings and the background to build Docker container support into Windows Server. So there you have it, Leonardo.
Amazing. So, okay, so I have a question here. I'm not gonna tweet it to you, Mary Jo. I'm just going to ask it because I'm on the show, so I can do that. And this is a question that I'm always grappling with as I see the various things that are happening. There's obviously a sense that there's kind of a new Microsoft and that it's a reinvigorated company. And whether it's coincidental with Satya Nadella or because of Satya Nadella, obviously a lot of the news that comes out, the changes, the decisions that Microsoft has been announcing, were set in motion before Nadella came on board. But it just feels like it's a new Microsoft, a more open, more cross-platform, more inclusive, more intelligent Microsoft that's making better decisions. Is this, and I'll ask this of both of you, is this an illusion or is it a new Microsoft? Are they a much hotter and more interesting company today than they were a year ago?
They were never uninteresting. What do you mean?
You're asking two people whose whole livelihoods are built around watching them. So we've always had to find them interesting and find things to be interested in.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting inherently because of their stuff. But, I mean, you have to admit that there's all kinds of stuff going on that's just like, wow, that doesn't seem very Microsoft-like.
I think Paul and I were just talking about this before the show. They are a really different company than they were a year ago. Like almost 180 degree different company than they were a year ago in terms of, you know, how they're structured, how they make decisions, how quickly they roll stuff out. They really are different. How that difference will impact them going forward in terms of products and product uptake and where they fit in the world, especially in a cross-platform and mobile world, I think we have to still wait and see. But I have to say, this year, I've covered Microsoft on and off for 30 years, and this was the most interesting year that I can recall in covering them, because it just was like everything you could assume they were going to do, they almost did the exact opposite. So that made it fun and interesting.
Yeah, that jives with my perspective. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the other thing I think, I know Mary Jo sees this like I do, there's also a backlash to this kind of stuff, which is interesting kind of inherently as well, that there's this kind of core contingent of Windows or Microsoft enthusiasts to a small degree, but just people who support the technology, you know, IT pros, whatever, who see Microsoft porting all this stuff to mobile devices and don't quite get what they're doing. People are getting very sensitive about features showing up on iPhone or Android before they show up on Windows Phone, for example. So that's an interesting dynamic, and that's not something we would have seen in Microsoft a year ago even, you know. Even when you talk about devices and services or mobile first, cloud first, you know, you sort of assume in the background, Windows first, hopefully, but at the very least, Windows will always be best. And we're not really necessarily seeing that. The other thing, just looking at it from the outside world, from my perspective, looking in at Microsoft, is in the past, Microsoft always had a very clear revenue model. They sold licenses for the software largely to businesses or to PC makers, and they made a lot of money doing that. But with people moving to mobile platforms, they need to find a new way to make money. And it's confusing. You know, they have subscription services, Office 365 being the big one. They have mobile apps that require those services. And then they kind of don't require them anymore. And so how are they making money on Office for iPad if no one has to pay to use it? It's confusing. The list of features that you get with or without a subscription is confusing. And in many ways, that type of confusion is very typical of Microsoft, you know, the kind of arbitrary licensing rules that they've always had. So in that sense, it's somewhat comfortable. But I don't know that the revenue stream from Office 365 subscriptions makes up for Windows plus Office from the golden years. And, you know, obviously there are other subscriptions they want to get people latched onto, Azure being a big one for businesses and so forth. But I do question whether that stuff adds up in the same way that the old business model worked.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And you know, I think it's not just about the market. It's about the fact that the world has changed. I don't think it's possible for anyone to sustain a platform plus application area cash cow thing that they the way they used to. And it's just not possible anymore. The world is a very different place, and you know, it's interesting to see Microsoft trying to find its way in a world where, you know, they used to be back in the days when people used to spend lots and lots of money for desktop software. Microsoft was the company, and now they're entering in a new world. They're still doing really well, but they still have to figure out what it's going to be.
And Microsoft is the British Empire after World War II.
Yeah,
you know, we all remember the glory years, and sometimes we go kicking and screaming into the reality of the present, but things are different now, you know, and it's hard. It's hard for some people to accept, you know, when those things kind of, when that changes. It's a big change.
Well, stiff upper lip there in Redmond.
I think they don't have a choice, though, too. And you know, what they could have done was just stay the course and become increasingly irrelevant.
Exactly.
It would have taken a long time for that to happen, but it would have been like a slow decline. But I like a slow motion car crash.
It would have been terrible.
I like seeing them fight back and at least try. Yeah. You know, I like the can do. Let's try this spirit that we're seeing. I think it's good.
And they make good stuff. I mean, the reality is that I don't kind of blindly support Microsoft because I've been doing it for a while or something. And there's some weird inertia to it. I mean, I regularly try every device there is. I try rival platforms. I use Chromebooks. I use I've got a MacBook Air, as you can see. I'm sorry, by and large, not always, not 100% across the board, but as far as the core platform stuff goes, I prefer Windows. I really do. I really prefer Office. And for very kind of pragmatic, not emotional reasons, I just feel that they're more productive for me. And, you know, I give the other stuff a shot and I get it. And I get why people, you know, move on to different things. And I understand all that kind of stuff. But I really feel like there's a value to what they do. They don't always communicate it effectively, you know, which is why Mary Jo and I have a job, I guess. but it's there, you know, it's real. It's not something artificial. I really do prefer it.
Yeah. And I think it's really fascinating to see them be less apologetic about doing hardware. Of course, Microsoft has always built hardware. And the interesting fact about their hardware business in the past used to be little stuff, keyboards, mice, you know, cameras or whatever it was. And their hardware, even though there was, you know, relatively insignificant categories, was always among the best hardware in their categories. And now that they're building more hardware, more central hardware, I'd love to see them just say, you know, throw the whole don't compete with your partners out the window, because I think Google proved that that's a model that is actually pays off, because, you know, you if you rely on this ecosystem, they're going to be a bunch of slackers. Just look what happened in the Windows Phone market. They got to the point where people
the PC were, market too. I mean, that's the double edged sword thing.
I'm glad they have partners.
I don't see them moving away from it. And Microsoft has three or four major conferences a year, and one of them is a partner conference. And there's a reason for that. I mean, it's not just historical. Yes, Windows Phone could have gone to market a little differently. Maybe Surface wouldn't have been required if Microsoft's PC maker partners had listened, you know, because Microsoft had tried for years and years to get them to stop providing crapware, to do, you know, look at different models. And then when Windows 8 shipped, to actually put touch on computers and make these hybrid PCs, which they resisted in mass, you know. I mean, things could have gone a little differently, but I don't see them completely abandoning the partner approach. I think it's just too core to what they do.
Okay.
And I love having choice. The best thing about the Windows ecosystem to me is a choice. Like a lot of people like the Surface Pro 3, and that's great, and they get to buy it from Microsoft, but I didn't like it that much, and I had an option. I had the option to go buy a high-end, really awesome Windows laptop from one of their partners. Right. So I was glad that they weren't the only game.
Yeah, that's a great point. All right, well, in just a sec, we're going to come back and do our picks. I'm not going to do any picks. It's going to be all Paul and Mary Jo, but we are going to do picks. But first, let's talk about a good night's sleep. One of our sponsors today is Casper. Casper has really disrupted the mattress industry because they figured out a way to make it super great for you to try a bed, their beds, their amazing mattresses in your own home. They send it by mail and you think, okay, that's ridiculous. I'm going to get this mattress sized package in the mail. I can't imagine that. No, it's going to be a much smaller package. And when you open it and turn this thing loose, it's going to grow before your very eyes into a full-size, ultra-comfortable mattress. And the way they make it so comfortable is they use a combination of latex and memory foam. They put these together in a way that makes it both firm and really soft with that memory foam quality that remembers where you are. And so it's just a fantastic mattress. Here's, if you're watching the video, here's Leo unpackaging. You see it came in a very small box, and now it's just essentially growing in fast motion into a full-size mattress. Here comes his swan dive onto the mattress, and there it is. If you have one of these mattresses and you jump on it, you too will be in slow motion, just like Leo. And of course, his dog likes it too, even though the dog doesn't really have enough weight to actually press down on the memory foam because it's a tiny dog. But Casper is just fantastic because it's disrupted the market because it enables you to get it, not only the quality of the mattress, but get it by mail and then try it for 100 days. If you go to the mattress store and you lay down on a mattress and you kind of think, well, I guess this might be comfortable. I can't really tell. I'm fully dressed. I'm wearing shoes. And I'm just sitting here and the salesperson is standing there. So I'm not really sure if I like this or not. With Casper, you can sleep on it every night for 100 nights. And after 100 nights, I guarantee you, you're going to know whether you or not you want this mattress. And believe me, you're going to want it. You're going to keep it and you're going to love it because Casper mattresses are incredibly comfortable and sleep is extremely important. So make sure you get a Casper mattress, at least one, so you can sleep better. And it's very inexpensive. Get a Casper mattress, $500 for a twin or $950 for a king-size bed. If you compare that to mattresses in the industry, industry averages for mattress prices, that's an incredible price. And you can save an additional $50 just for listening to this show as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/windows and enter the promo code windows, $50. That'll make you sleep better, too. That's casper.com/windows, and the promo code is windows. That is a $50 promo code. Got to sleep on a Casper mattress. Well, picks of the week. Paul, what is your tip of the week?
What is my tip of the week?
Something about a digital gift card.
Yes. So Microsoft this week released a digital gift cards app only for Windows Phone, which I thought was a little weird, and actually then only for Windows Phone 8.1. Which pretty much leaves out everyone on Verizon. But what it allows you to do is buy Microsoft Store, and by Microsoft Store, I shouldn't even say that. It's really Xbox Store, Windows Store, Windows Phone Store, virtual version of a gift card. And so I bought one for myself to test it, $10 or whatever. But you can go from $10 to $100, different designs. I think the only confusing bit is just that it works across the stores. So you can use it to buy music from Xbox Music. You can do it to rent a movie or buy a movie from Xbox Video, buy apps on any of the stores, buy games on any of the stores, that kind of stuff. And so obviously physical gift cards probably aren't going anywhere, especially since this thing is only on Windows Phone, but kind of a neat new way to buy a gift card. Kind of a cool thing. Just as a side tip, last week, I had the big tip about the Microsoft Music Deals app, which at the time I think had, it was 100 free albums and then 50 or more $2 box sets. And these are box sets that could cost up to $100 each normally. Tremendous, tremendous deal. This week they added or they changed the deal over. So there's actually now 50, I believe it's 50 new free albums. And I went in and found some new stuff. So there's definitely new stuff in there. So if you haven't looked at it since last week, check that one out again as well.
All right. And what is your software pick of the week?
Well, it's Acompli, right? So we've already kind of talked about it. But this is, I think this is a tremendous app. I don't use iOS or Android daily or anything or day to day, but having installed it across all those devices, I look at that and I see this is what Outlook Mobile should be. This is what it should be on Windows Phone. This is what it should be on Windows 10. I hope they do that. And like I said earlier, it integrates not just multiple services, meaning all the Exchange, Outlook.com, Google, Yahoo, et cetera, but also the storage services. So Google Drive, Outlook, I'm sorry, OneDrive, Dropbox, and you have all the stuff in one app. And so it allows you to do things like send attachments virtually where they're kept in the cloud storage. They don't go with the email. And they also do a nifty job of just filtering email. And you can change this, but by default, it basically breaks down into email from people and email that's not from people. And I find that kind of it's simple. And it makes sense. You know, there's been a lot of work with email apps. So you look at Inbox from Google or all these different apps where they're trying to overthink email and you know, separating the important email from the unimportant email or the newsletter type stuff or whatever is in some ways a machine learning job or whatever, but it's the type of thing, you know, they would have sent Clippy after 10 years ago. But Acompli does a great job of it. It's just really nicely done. If you're running Android or iOS, definitely check that out.
Awesome. All right, Mary Jo, your enterprise pick of the week.
Yeah, my enterprise pick of the week. I'm not sure if Paul and Leo talked about this while I was away, but I'm guessing maybe not. Okay. Right before Thanksgiving, Microsoft said they would be rolling out some new features to Intune, which is their mobile device management technology. It used to be called Windows Intune, now called Microsoft Intune, because it also works with iOS and Android. And when they said they'd add some new features, I thought maybe, you know, a couple small new features. Well, they're rolling out a ton of new features, not just one or two. The list is endless, it feels like. But here's some of them that have been rolling out to people with Intune. They've got the new enhanced interface for the Intune administration console. You can push free store apps now to iOS devices. Enforcement of application install or uninstall. You can restrict access to Exchange on-premises email based on device enrollment. Man, there's just so many. Remote PIN reset for Windows Phone 8.1. If you have Intune, these should have been rolling out to you over the past week or so. But if you aren't familiar with what is available now, you might want to go back. And I'll have the link to this in the show notes. But you can check out this whole list of features. And they've said there are even more Intune features coming next year as they continue their rollout towards managing not just devices, but the apps and the data on those devices. So they're going to continue to have more Intune features rolling out on a more frequent basis. So something I think we'll see probably in the first quarter, more Intune stuff coming as they start rolling out the Office for Android apps and a lot of other new things. So keep your eyes peeled on Windows. I'm sorry, I called it Windows Intune. Microsoft Intune.
Awesome.
It's hard to avoid.
Yep.
I know.
Just try saying Apple Watch instead of iWatch. It's not easy, I tell you. what do you have in the codename pick of the week department?
Codename pick of the week is Vega. Vega was the codename for Dynamics CRM 2015. And the reason I made it this week's codename pick is as of December 1st, Microsoft made the Dynamics CRM 2015 technology generally available. So they made both the on-premises version of CRM 2015 and the cloud version generally available starting this week. If you're somebody who uses CRM 2015 online, the way you're going to get this is you have to go in and tell Microsoft when you want these bits pushed to you. You can set up when you want them pushed to you, which is pretty nice. So you have to proactively go in and do that as an administrator and tell them, hey, I want these bits now. A couple interesting features in this release, Cortana is integrated so that you can actually start doing things using voice with your CRM apps if you have a phone with Cortana on it. And right now that means Windows Phone 8.1. This release also is designed to break down silos between CRM and marketing. So Microsoft's done some integration around their marketing modules for Dynamics so that it works more tightly with their CRM modules. There's a whole list of other features that are part of this. I wrote a blog post. It has a link to a release guide. You can go check that out. It's a free download and it has the whole list of everything that's in the new CRM 2015 update for Dynamics.
That's a lot of information, but I got to tell you that the Cortana integration just stands out as being just filled with possibilities. I mean,
I know. Yeah. It does. Because we've been using Cortana for cute things like, you know, set my alarm or what was the score of the blah, blah, blah game, whatever your team is.
That's not a cute thing. That's mission critical. What are you talking about?
Now you can do real things like, you know, who's going to be in my sales meeting or, you know, real things instead of just fun things.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And I can't wait to see further integrations. It's just going to be, I love that whole category. It's just fantastic. All right. You have something in the fermented grain beverage department as well. What is your beer pick of the week?
My beer pick of the week, and I don't know how to pronounce this brewery. Maybe someone who speaks Danish does. T-O-O-L. Tool, maybe?
It's easy after you've had a few of these.
It is. Yeah, so when I was in Denmark a week ago, I got to drink this. The beer is the Liquid Confidence Cognac Barrel Aged Imperial Stout. I love the name, Liquid Confidence. Yep. After one of these, you have a lot of confidence because I think it's like a 12%+ beer. But it's delicious if you like Imperial Stouts. And you can taste the cognac, a little like little cognac touch from the barrels that this was aged in. Tall All is a very famous microbrewer in Denmark. So it was really great to get to try one of their very interesting and hard to get beers over here. But if you can get this one, it's in bottles and on tap in various places. I would suggest trying it.
Are you supposed to drink it out of a snifter?
Yeah, you're not supposed to drink a whole pint of it, which I did not, I'll have you know. Okay. But you should because it's your birthday.
That is correct. You are correct. And so I won't because I can't get it unless you overnight me one or something like that or something. But that is awesome. I love your picks, beer picks of the week. It's a refreshing close to every episode literally of every episode of Windows Weekly. Paul Thorat is at the super site for Windows. That's winsupersite.com. There it is. Look at that. Oh, my.
Oh, man.
Look at that.
Yikes.
That is perfect.
You're going to see this on the video, people.
Yeah, just replace your entire homepage with that. That is perfect. Who
Paul
made that?
Dressed as Alex, where did that come from? One of our listeners.
Oh, that came from Twitter. Okay.
Yeah.
Good old Twitter. Wow. All right, Paul. Well, thank you for all your insights. And this is the first time I've ever hosted this show. Hopefully not the last, but I thank you for all your insights as an audience member. And I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Glad to have you. Thank you for being here.
It's my it's my distinct pleasure. Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com, which is redirect to the ZDNet site. Your insights are brilliant as well. I really enjoy them. And I thank you for all of your work. Again, as an audience member and a fanboy, I want to thank you for all of it.
Thanks, Mike.
Now, do you recall working at CMP?
Yep.
Back in the day, back in the 90s, I remember running into you because you were this Windows expert back then, and I was the editor in chief of Windows Magazine, and he was like, "Why doesn't she work for us?" CMP had a strict anti-poaching policy.
Yeah, you've come a long way from your former Windows days now.
Yes. I started there in my 20s. But anyway, those are good times. Oh. And
so you must know David Chernikov.
Yes.
Yes.
He used to write the Windows NT column for Windows Magazine, and I later worked with him at Windows NT Magazine.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, those were the days. Paul and Mary Jo, thank you so much. Leo, Paul, and Mary Jo do the show every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC at live.twit.tv. And, of course, the show is available for download and subscription at twit.tv/WW. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. And thanks to everyone for tuning in. They will see you, and I will also see you next week on Windows Weekly.